Thank you. Well, thank you very much, my longtime and dear friend, Harold Russell. It's always a joy to be introduced by you. I'm sort of glad that Willard Wirtz was called up to Capitol Hill. Don't you tell Willard that I said that. But he has a few problems on his hands this morning. In fact, all of our schedules have been sort of disrupted this morning. There's one way to violate every rule of common courtesy, and that's to get elected to public office, because you never know just what's going to happen to you during the day. I got ready to come over here about 10:45, and I had a change in my schedule all at once. But you're the most charitable people in the world and the most kindly, and so you have excused Willard Wirtz. The president has called him into service at Capitol Hill, and I hope you'll excuse me too, because I got a call as well. Now, I want to, first of all, pay my respects to everyone here that has participated in this program, to this distinguished chairman, my friend Harold, the president's, who is the chairman of the President's Committee on Employment of the Handicapped, to Mr. Henry Viscardi, president of Abilities Incorporated, to my friend Dr. Margaret Mead. I'm sorry that I didn't hear Margaret's address. To Frank Blair, whom all of us know and listen to so many times. He almost speaks as much as I do. And to our handicapped American of the Year, a gentleman that I've just had the privilege of meeting and meeting his lovely wife, to Art Edgerton, and of course to Dr. Collins, and to my old friend Paul over here, Paul Strachan, who gave me a pat on the back that dislocated three vertebrae just as I went by. Paul and I have been working together for years, and it's just wonderful to see him and to have a chance to exchange these happy greetings that we exhibited to you. Springtime is here. Springtime in the nation's capital is a time of beauty. It is a time also of great change, and generally for the good. It brings cherry blossoms, which most of you have seen. It brings the baseball season, which is a certain amount of a grief to the followers of the Washington Senators and the Minnesota Twins. And even more refreshing event than all of this is your annual meeting of the President's Committee on the Handicapped. I think that's the best thing of the whole spring season. Now, my medical friends here know that I'm a pharmacist by trade, and I always mention that. They're in short supply these years, and in light of the precarious nature of elective public office, Harold, I like to keep my professional talents alive. And I can't help but say that your meeting is sort of like a vitamin tonic. It's just a sort of, I hate to use proprietary names, but it's youthful geritol, you see. You're real champions of hard work and volunteer service, and you make us mighty proud. So I can only say that it's a special joy to visit with you for the third year in a row. If you're not tired of me, I'm not tired of you. And I'm so pleased that the president always finds himself so involved and so busy that he can't get here. I just like to keep him real busy so I get all the fun that goes on in this government. Our president just returned from a trip of sadness and sorrow, and yet of hard work, and he has asked me to bring to you once again his own personal greetings. You know that you are the leaders of his committee. It's quite an honor to be on the president's committee. I know my wife serves on one of the president's committees. She reminds me every day that she said, you were just nominated. I was selected. Being the leaders of the President's Committee, you have a special responsibility. You represent, as courageous and as far-visioned a group of men and women as will assemble at any time in our nation's capital. And I meant every word that I said to you, and you are a refreshing spirit. You are the voice, the conscience, and you are the strong right arm of your president in this good fight for economic and social justice for the disabled. And what you do and how you do it will determine what's going to happen to literally hundreds of thousands of our fellow Americans. As individuals, many of you may need a cane or a crutch or an electronic aid or a brace or a wheelchair. But I'm here to say what you know, that you have what life really requires. You have heart and spirit and will. And that's what it takes to make a great person. That's what it takes to make a great nation. And you not only move just yourselves, but you're moving this whole nation of ours forward. Forward over obstacles of misunderstanding and indifference. Forward over obstacles of prejudice. Because there are all kinds of prejudices, not just racial and religious prejudice, but there is regrettably even prejudice against people who may be a little different. What you're doing to remove these barriers of prejudice and misunderstanding is nothing short of phenomenal. And I, for one, want to express a personal note of appreciation and thanks. You've helped the disabled move forward through factory gates that have been far too long only partially opened or, in fact, closed. You've helped them move forward to better white-collar and blue-collar jobs. Yes, forward to buildings and homes designed for the handicapped, and even machines, may I say, specially designed for the handicapped. And as I look around this room today, I see one example after another of triumphant human spirit, of the victory of ability over disability. Isn't that wonderful that America recognizes ability and recognizes this great victory of ability over disability? Merit, that's the aristocracy of America. Merit, competence, ability, and you have it. Now, there's so much in my heart that I would like to say about all of these magnificent leaders that you have here. And I've mentioned some of them already. My friend Harold Russell, the best years of our lives, Harold. I think that was your great movie production, as I recall, or book two. And I just never seen anybody that moved me quite so much in terms of human spirit as this wonderful chairman. I consider that I'm a rich man to have shared in his friendship. And I want to once again convey my special greetings and congratulations to you, Art Edgerton. What an inspiration Art is for all of us. What an inspiration is the winner of the Handicapped Man of the Year Award. Art Edgerton symbolizes not only those disabled Americans who deservedly win public acclaim, but he also symbolizes that vast number of other disabled that never get public acclaim. They're relatively unknown. But they themselves, in their own way, win quiet victories over impairment, over disability. And Art, I want to tell you that you ought to get a prize just because you have such a nice wife, even if you didn't do anything else. Now, I mentioned my old friend Paul Strachan. He's a vivid reminder of how this entire program got started in Employ the Handicapped Week and the President's Committee on the Handicapped. He used to lobby the living daylights out of me when I was up there in the Senate. Paul never would never would or could quite hear anyone say no. Particularly when he thought that the word that you ought to say was yes, as it related to the advancement of the disabled. Loss of hearing and loss of sight, loss of arms or loss of limbs, paralysis, a cerebral palsy, mental handicaps, convulsive disorders. This is not a catalog of defeat, my fellow Americans. It's a cavalcade of victories, a cavalcade of victories of the spirit over the flesh, of courage over resignation. And what good news goes from this hall today? Every place I look, I see a champion. Every place that I cast my eye, I see a victory. So my fellow Americans, smile. You're living in the greatest country on the face of the earth, and we're doing things. We're doing things for people. And I want you to know that this is my way of saluting you. I pledge to you, as your vice president, and as the representative of the President of the United States, your government's continued effort, all-out effort, for this cause of cooperation and aid to the handicapped. Now, we've come a long way. We're approaching this long-sought goal next year of 200,000 Americans to be vocationally rehabilitated in a 12-month period. That is still not enough, I know, not nearly enough, because the human backlog awaiting training and retraining is still enormous. But I want to make it clear that we're at least keeping up our pace. And you know, we Americans are always going to have something to do. We're never going to overcome all of the obstacles that we have, at least in our lifetime. But I've always believed that what's important is that you keep moving, that you keep moving forward. It's the beginnings that count. And you've done this job of moving this country forward. And there isn't any force in America that can stop this forward movement, because you're behind the forward movement. And people know that you have the ability to gain victories. Let me just say a word about money now, about this year's budget. The president has proposed quite a sizable sum in his budget, $331 million for federal matching grants to the states. Let me show you what that means. Only about 12 years ago, we had $23 million. $23 million, just a little over 10 years ago. In 1966, it was $171 million. $171 million. We are doubling the war on handicapped, on the problems of impairment and disability. You talk about escalation. We're escalating this struggle. And with your help, we can do even more. And I want to pay tribute to our state governors and our state legislatures in most of our states, because they deserve credit for their leadership and for the increased activity at the state and local level in matching these federal grants. But what better investment could they or we make than this one? The investment in increasing earning power, increased taxpaying power, but more importantly, increased dignity power for the disabled. No nation will ever become insolvent investing in people, the finest resource that we have. Now, before me, I see another kind of power around here, and I look off over in this direction. I see the youth power. The youth power of the winners of the high school essay contest. And you know the subject, ability counts. And I want to congratulate all of these winners, these fine young men and women. The well-being of American youth itself is very much on our minds and in our hearts these days. And let me go on record once again. I get around this country a great deal. I know that there are times that parents and older folks become concerned about young people. Well, all parents have been that way throughout the many centuries. We were once young people too. It's hard for us to remember, but we were. And I gather that my mother and father worried a little bit. If they didn't, they should have. I can only say this as a former teacher. and as one that has associated with young people a great deal. And I think our young people of the year 1967, these young people of the 1960s are the finest young people that America's ever had. They're talented and they're capable. More importantly, my fellow Americans, they're socially concerned. They're interested in a better America. And when they rise up and protest from time to time, it's generally because they want something to be better. They speak the conscience of a clean heart and a clean mind and a clean soul. Well, now at this very time, I'm engaged in an urgent new program which will be a particular help, I hope, to the nation's young, including, hopefully, the physically and the mentally handicapped. By executive order, President Johnson has established a new President's Council on Youth Opportunity, of which I have the good fortune of being the chairman. Its goal is to help expand job as well as recreational and educational opportunities for the young, especially during these hot summer months ahead. In 1965 and again in 1966, with the help of private industry, we were able to generate over 1 million extra jobs for needy teenagers, the youngsters of the families of the poor. Now, we're going to have to far surpass that mark this year. And I'm calling upon you to go back to your local communities and to see your mayor, to see your Chamber of Commerce, to see your labor union executives, to see your veterans organizations, your social and service clubs, your churches, and to say, what are we doing about a youth opportunity program in our town? What are we going to do about youth opportunity not only for the physically and the mentally well? What are we going to do for the disabled, for the mentally retarded? Because don't forget, everybody is one of God's children, and everybody deserves a break. Everybody deserves care and attention. So believe me, if you do nothing else in this meeting except to go home and walk right into the mayor's office and say, Mr. Mayor, I was down to Washington. I heard that vice president, and he said, I was supposed to come back and ask you, what have you done about establishing in this town a youth opportunity council? And what are we going to do about the needy young people in this city? What are we going to do about this hot summer? What are we going to do about education, remedial reading, recreation, swimming pools, parks, playgrounds, jobs? I want to know what your program is. Now, many of the mayors will say they have a good one, and they have. But just tell them right now that this job has to be done where you live. Can't be done out of Washington. All we can do is help. I think there are too many Americans that depend on too many things being done in Washington. I happen to believe that we ought to be a very self-reliant people. I happen to believe that we ought to take on the job as much as we can right at our own home, in our own home, in our own town. And then we can have Washington help. Well, now many of you know exactly what I mean, and I don't need to lecture you on it. I just call your attention to it and hope that you'll give us a helping hand. Now, one of the president's mandates is for programs designed to identify, diagnose, and treat the illness and handicapping conditions of youth who participate in these summer programs. So make it your business to see that the handicapped get a little extra attention. We do need early warning systems. We need an early warning system to protect this country from attack from abroad. And we've spent billions to get it. But my dear friends, we need early warning medical systems too, or early medical warning systems to detect disability. No one here need be reminded that much of the anguish of disability might be avoided if only illness and potential disability could be spotted in time and corrective action taken. Just think what prenatal care could mean if every mother could have it. My dear friends, America ought to be a little ashamed of itself to have such a high infant mortality rate. This rich and powerful country ought to be ashamed of itself to know that even in America today, there are young people hungry. It ought to be a little bit ashamed of itself that every boy and girl hasn't had a physical checkup and some medical attention and dental attention. This is the richest country on the face of the earth in deposits in its banks. I want it to be rich in its soul and its spirit and its heart. I want it to be rich in the love of people. When I see some people filled with bitterness and hatred, as I've seen, it grieves me. I don't try to preach religion as a public man, because I feel that people always are a little bit suspicious of you when you do that. But let me say this, that there is no room in America for hate. None whatsoever. And there should be little or no room in America for despair or for fear. This ought to be a nation that is built on brotherhood and affection and respect and dignity, courage. And I think that each and every one of us can help make it that way. Oh, when I think of how we could have avoided so much difficulty, physical difficulty, mental difficulty, if we'd only taken corrective action in time. Our goal is to open health and other opportunities for every age bracket, for every month of the year, and not just the summer months. I was recently in Europe, as you know. And I had the chance to tell some people there that what America's engaged in is a marvelous new experience, a whole new adventure, an adventure in opportunity. Everybody counts in this country. Everybody is important. And the only title that's worthy of having in America is just to be known as citizen. Oh, what a great title that is. That's better than being king or emperor or president or vice president or senator or governor, whatever it is. Just to be known as citizen of the United States of America and to have every right and privilege and responsibility and duty that comes with that citizenship. That's a real title. We know what our goals are in this country. We know that freedom is our goal. Freedom from tyranny. Tyranny of the mind, that is, of bigotry and of dogma, of prejudice. But also freedom of tyranny of a birth or a later defect. Freedom from insecurity, of joblessness or underemployment. Freedom from poverty. And freedom from discrimination. These are the things that America stands for. This is just one so-called big liberation operation. We're engaged in our own program of liberation and emancipation. Lincoln proclaimed the Emancipation Proclamation. We have to make it a reality. Now, I, of course, refer to a voluntarily and truly democratic alliance in our country to liberate human beings from the bondage of hopelessness, of despair, of bleak and barren lives. Now, there are people that come around with these instant cures, these cure-alls. And then there are others that come around and say, well, there ought to be a law. Or some of them say we ought to repeal some laws. But let me just put this in proper perspective. We have good laws. We have good laws in such things as civil liberties and civil rights. We have good laws for the handicapped. Our job is to fulfill these laws, to make them work, and to make sure that they're not crippled or starved by inadequate attention or resources, or to make sure that they're not crippled or starved by the forces of retreat and reaction. Make no mistake, backward-looking forces are definitely at work here. They may act under many high-sounding appeals, but their target is the same: to undermine the war against poverty, the peaceful effort for human rights, to tear up the foundations of equal educational opportunity, equal housing, equal jobs for all, or equal employment opportunities. Those forces are at work. But let us remember that those forces have been defeated and they can be defeated again. Let's remember that equality must mean equality for everyone. Not any exceptions. No yes buts. No footnotes. Equality means exactly what it says. The sacred documents of this country, the charters of this land, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, the Emancipation Proclamation, the Atlantic Charter, they do not promise justice and equality just for the healthy or just for the physically and the mentally blessed, or for the geniuses, or for the rich, or the good-looking, or the clean-cut, or the city-dweller, or the white man, or the Caucasian. But those sacred charters that we all say we love, they promise equal treatment and equality under the law and equality in the eyes of God for all of God's children, of every race, of every creed and color, of every circumstance of birth, of every level of IQ. Now let's just keep that in mind, because once you start to define who is to get equal treatment and start to limit it, you may cut yourself out. So be careful. It's better to include everyone than you're sure you're in. Now, not long ago, not long ago, it was my pleasure to see some of the remarkable handiwork of a group of the handicapped, and in this instance, the mentally retarded. Our good friend, Hank Viscardi, one of the most remarkable leaders in this entire program, showed members of the President's Committee on Mental Retardation some perfectly beautiful glass engraved plates that his mentally retarded workers had made. Now, Mrs. Humphrey is a member of the President's Committee on the Mentally Retarded and is particularly interested in opening vocational opportunities for the retarded. And seeing that impressive glassware served as another reminder of what so many individuals can do if given the chance, if given the training. I think this audience knows that our first little granddaughter was mongoloid. So we're deeply interested in the handicapped. And may I say that once you have this experience, you do not tolerate apathy, indifference on the part of people who somehow or another have never known what it is to suffer. All of us must join together. And yet, you know, there are so many wonderful compensations.